right, it's another Wednesday night, and you are in the zone here on News Talk 96.1 and AM 1370 WGCL. Dave and Glass with you again on another Wednesday night, and we are, as always, taking your phone calls at 333-2665. Lots to talk about tonight. We are past, of course, the college basketball season with a new national champion and some notes on Indiana basketball as Thomas Bryant will return for his sophomore year and Troy Williams will enter the NBA draft discovery process, not hire an agent, so he has the ability to come back next year, at least at this point in time. And while we wait for that to flush out and to see what else might happen on the recruiting trail, we have some other things going on. In particular, the IU football spring practice culminates this Friday night with the Cream and Crimson game at 7 o'clock over at Memorial Stadium. And of course, there's always news and notes that go along with that. And unfortunately, usually the biggest news of the spring ends up being all the promise teams have or injuries. And now here in the middle of the week of Cream and Crimson week, we have some injury news. And unfortunately, it kind of puts a bow on a what was once an extremely promising Indiana recruiting class, Indianapolis in particular recruiting class, as Dominique Booth apparently has not been cleared by Indiana doctors. He will not play football again at Indiana. He was a four-star wide receiver out of Pike, their all-time leading receiver there at Pike High School, and was a four-star player who had committed to Tennessee, also had offers from Florida State and Alabama. And Glass, you come in with that kind of reputation, and certainly you're going to be expected to accomplish an awful lot, but his career here never really got off the ground. He's got a wrist injury. He's got surgery. They're not going to clear him. And again, you know, we'll talk about the recruiting class again, but it's disappointing for Dominique Booth. It's disappointing for IU fans because he had such promise. We expected so much out of him, and you're not going to end up getting anything out of him.
Yep. And you know what? That's the way it is. The backstory of this is almost as more interesting than what's happening because Dominique Booth tweeted out the other day that he's been cleared by every other doctor he's seen, but IU won't clear him. So you never know what's in the politics involved with this. Maybe there isn't any politics. Maybe I'm reading into it too much. But
it's hard not to when he tweets that out about the doctors.
Right, and that's the point. But those doctors don't matter because you can get a doctor, a family friend, or anybody else. If it's a 50-50 decision and the 51 side says no, and the 51 side says yes, well, that doesn't change anything except there's one body that makes that final decision, and that's Indiana University from what it sounds like. Mm-hmm. So it's tough because you didn't get to see what it could have been. If I remember correctly, the first season he played, he struggled at times to catch the ball. He struggled to get off the line of scrimmage.
He struggled to play early on, and later on in the season he started some games.
What most freshmen do. Yeah. Let's be fair about that as well. Yep. And then last year, Indiana goes out and racks up a ton of offense, a ton of points, a ton of everything else. And again, they don't have to wait for a guy to get better. They don't have to save a spot at the table. I don't know how this Bill of Rights thing works or anything else works. It sounds like he's going to graduate, and he's going to go somewhere else as a graduate transfer.
They're going to have him as a student coach for the next year. Right. When he graduates next spring, he'll be able to transfer with 2 years. So he'll graduate in 3 years.
So it's unlucky is what it is, but we've seen this with other players. We've had back injuries, offensive linemen that haven't been able to continue, and Indiana can't play football based on what the recruiting services said 3 or 4 years ago. That's not how it works anymore. Jason Spriggs came in here as a tight end or whatever he was at 225 pounds and now could be a first-round draft pick. So you just have to be – that's why you got 100 guys. How many scholarships you got? 85, 80?
Yeah, I can't
85. You can't – in football, one guy isn't going to bother you as much as one guy is in basketball just because of the numbers game. So, yeah, it stinks you don't get a perceived playmaker with a big star next to his name. We really never saw Dominique Booth. If this was James Hardy after 2 years where he caught 20 touchdown passes and 1,800 yards, you'd be like, oh, my gosh, what's going on? But that's not the case.
It's all about the promise of an Indiana kid. And, again, what ties it all together is the class that he came in with, and particularly the Indianapolis class, because it was a really good year for a few recruits out of Indianapolis, and only one of them ever turned into anything here at Indiana, and that was Darius Latham out of North Central. But we remember David Kenny was a big player also out of Pike. He was a defensive end. He never did anything here and left after basically one spring practice, Antonio Allen, of course, he was a very nice looking prospect until he got in legal trouble.
Well, that's a whole other spectrum.
You know, Chase Dutra is the only player I think that's left from that group. Darius Latham had a nice short career here at Indiana.
What about the kid from Chicago, the running back with the knee problem? busted his knee up twice.
Yeah.
Mister, he was gonna.
Well, there's always somebody. Exactly. Right,
that's the point. But you that's why you have 15-person, 16-person recruiting classes, and you add five or six guys later to get to that 23, 24
number. There's a weird parallel there with the movement on the basketball team. That's what makes it even weirder. Is you got these Indiana classes and some really high profile guys.
And it might just be numerology.
And you don't get anything out of
it.
But not much.
But that's the good news. And I think this is the compliment to both programs in that was these were big deals, and look what they did in spite of without all those pieces together. And again, hype is one thing. Getting on the field, putting your pads on, putting your lacing up your shoes, taping your ankles, shooting threes, or making buckets is a totally different thing. And the good news was. The good news is Indiana, Dave, 5, 6, 8, 10 years ago might have had to rely on those guys to get through a tough time like that. They don't have to anymore. So you got to give Wilson some credit, and you got to give Crane some credit.
And the 333-2665 is a phone number. And let's be fair about it. I mean, the wide receiver group has not been up to snuff the last couple years. And so having this kid being able to come through would have been nice. He didn't. He wasn't able to. He was injured and didn't happen. It was slow to latch onto the offense originally. But, I mean, you feel for the kid not being able to be here. He's got some good schools listed as interested in him when he graduates, so we'll all wish him the best. But that will bring a close to the on-field era of Dominic Booth. Again, a lot of promise didn't amount to much for Indiana, unfortunately. The other news, though, and again, this one's hard to get a bead on exactly what it means, but Kameon Patrick is going to have knee surgery and be out for the rest of the spring. And the reason this is important is he was brought in with a lot of fanfare last year out of junior college and was or transferring, I believe. But either way, he was brought in as a guy that was going to be a playmaker. He was another four-star type of guy. I think he had also been at Tennessee or committed to Tennessee. In the practices before the Duke bowl game, he was moved to running back and got some time there, and they really like his size, 6'2", 225. They really like that. They were giving him a shot there. So I think a lot of people got excited about his potential there. Now he's going to be out. It comes into a season where all of the wide receiver positions are wide open. The running back positions are wide open. The quarterback, to a degree, is wide open. There's so much that's wide open with this offense.
Don't forget.
They've always produced on offense, but there's still a lot of questions, and I don't know where this guy would have fit, but there was a lot of promise there. Now he's injured, too.
And now you've got to hope Devine Redding can carry the season like he finished last year once Jordan Howard went out in big games.
And they have a lot of bodies at all these skill positions. Don't get me wrong.
Yeah, that is the good news. But again, getting out there and doing it's one thing, and having a new signal caller and having new leadership in the skill positions to a degree, because again, not a lot of these guys factor. Semi Cobb's a good player last year, made a lot of catches, played well. But you had guys, and especially in the backfield when Howard got hurt, you're running guys through there trying to find some sparks. And again, competition's a good thing. It's really nice to say, well, it's great to have Tevin Coleman coming back and you expect 1,500 yards, or Jordan Howard transfers in and a guy ran for 1,800, whatever those numbers were. Sometimes you get a little itchy, but Devine Redding did put up 1,000 yards.
Yeah.
That happened. And whether that can continue to happen is hope the injury bug stays away from him. But you'd like to have, if Howard twists his ankle, a guy like Redding that pops in. Now do you have rookie Brookings jump in and take that spot? Mm-hmm. Alex Rodriguez got some carries. I don't know anything about the new freshmen who aren't even here yet.
Right. Yes,
so you shouldn't put your weight in the guys that are showing up in August. We've seen time and time again. That's too big of a leap. It's too quick. Unless they are just unbelievably gifted and smart.
Mm-hmm.
Because I think people forget when they read these forms and say, oh, well, he ran a 4-something this, and he's got good – but he's got to know the offense.
No,
you got to know when to block.
You don't get on the field if in practice you don't show that you've got some grasp of what's going on, and it's so much more complex when you get to college.
And that's why you can't live through the depth chart. You've got to see what these guys are doing in practice. And Kameon Patrick, the thing people get excited about him, and rightfully so, Kevin Wilson talked more about him after some games than he did about what the team just did on the field, because he was tearing practice up.
And I think
that's what hurts a little bit.
And again, I think we talked about, he mentioned him right after the Purdue game. He didn't even play in the Purdue game.
Couldn't wait to talk about him.
Yeah, he was, and Kevin's not the guy that blows a lot of smoke up people's butts.
And
you know?
He didn't need to, because the kid already committed to he knew he couldn't play.
Right.
They tried to get him in at the last minute. He couldn't get in.
Had an academic
he could have left and went to JUCO. He could have went anywhere else. He stuck it out, and that's why, and this isn't a comparison with Booth, don't get me wrong. Well, that's why the story stinks.
Right.
Because Patrick was doing everything that they asked him to do. He just couldn't legally play because of the NCAA stuff. And this is completely unlucky is what it is. But Indiana football, Dave, has been unlucky over the years. This isn't the first or the last time it's going to happen.
We're used to being unlucky,
but
unfortunately.
The part that you do like is the cupboard is not bare. It was not someone. There is not – the program is to a point now where one player, even if it's Nate Sudfeld, is not going to dramatically end or begin a season. There's enough other players there, and that's what's encouraging, I think, moving forward.
A lot of turnover on the offensive side, a lot of players coming back on defense, but it wasn't very good. So we'll talk about what we think that might be in just a couple minutes. Dave and Glass with you in the Zone. All right, you're back in the Zone with Dave and Glass on News Talk 96.1 and AM 1370 WGCL. 333-2665 is a phone number. Reminder, we have Reds baseball coming up here a little after the show, 8 o'clock tonight. They are at Wrigley once again. They'll be there again tomorrow night, 8 o'clock. Then they move over to St. Louis on Friday night.
Reds, two bad pitches this year, 5-2. Yeah. Gave up a three-run shot.
It works sometimes.
In the eighth inning on Thursday or on Monday night is Addison Russell. Brandon Finnegan, no hitter, 6 2/3. Cubbies come back to win that one 5-3. But the Red Legs, again, off to a good start. And should be good weather in Chicago. Shouldn't have much to worry about. And we know what the forecast is here through the weekend. So St. Louis should be perfect all weekend for the Reds as well. And you can catch the whole Reds schedule, our broadcast schedule, and everything else at WGCLradio.com.
333-2665 is the phone number. So the other side of the ball for the Hoosiers has been the biggest question mark the last few years, and there's been some changes, of course, at the leadership spots on the defense, and Brian Knorr brought in has now been let go. Tom Allen brought in as the associate head coach for defense, essentially the defensive coordinator, and Mark Hagan makes his return as assistant defensive coordinator and defensive line coach. William Inge is still here. Noah Joseph is still here. Brandon Shelby is still here on the defensive side of the ball. What's interesting about this unit is you have a lot of youth coming back. You did lose one or two defensive backs, I believe, young kids who are transferring out. Kids are transferring out all the time. What frightens me a bit is with all the struggles on the defense, the defensive line actually wasn't all that bad last year. Receiving or passing defense, I guess, was atrocious because they didn't have a great pass rush, but it was as good as it's been in a few years. But that's what scares me is you've got a lot of turnover on that defensive line, and not a lot of the guys coming back are guys that strike you as big, Big Ten type players
well,
right now.
The good part of the turnover is you're putting in a brand new system, so you're not going to have to reprogram a lot of guys who didn't play. There's a brand new system, and you know what it is? It's a brand new opportunity. And obviously what they were trying didn't work in Coach Wilson's opinion, so they're going a different direction. Now, did you recruit to that system? No, because they've changed it up so many times recently in the last couple of years.
Right.
I don't think anything was in stone where you said, wow, they ran that defense for 20 years. Now they're changing it, and geez, what's going to happen? Well, that's not the case. And this team has been, if anything, fluid. They've had guys. They've got a ton of linebackers that can move around.
Yep.
They've got guys that have been maybe not the meat and muscle guys in the interior line you'd like to have three or four deep. You're not Michigan. That's not going to happen. You're not Ohio State. It's not going to happen. But they have guys who can do a job. And like you mentioned, they're not going to be all Big Ten performers, but that doesn't mean they can't affect football games, Dave. Remember, the offense has shown us over the last few years, you keep the opposition around 30 points, they got a shot.
Mm-hmm.
You're not asking this defense to give up only 150 yards rushing and only 150 yards passing. That's not fair to them. It's not fair to anything else. What their job is, and this is what you like about Tom Allen, we are not calling them turnovers. We are calling them takeaways. We're going to force you to do something.
I guess.
But hey. But you've got to do something different, and that's the key. You've got some playmakers, I think, in the linebacking core. I think you've got some guys in the secondary who played enough games last year who should be in better positions
down the road. You have a lot of bodies that are better athletes across the board than you had in the past. I think that's
accurate. And can you develop into football players? That's the next staff's question.
They're young. I think you've got good size now, where in the past, you know, you might have thrown a lot of 5'9", 5'10 DBs out there. Now you're talking Jonathan Crawford, had a real nice year as a freshman, 6'2". So, I mean, I think you've got better bodies. I think you've got better size.
If Chase Dutra's healthy, that helps.
The question is, do you have playmakers? Do you have enough of them that an injury doesn't kill you? I mean, an injury at any program to a really, really, really good player is going to hurt you. Don't get me wrong.
Unless you're Alabama.
Well, and even they don't like to do it.
They don't like that. But injuries are beyond your control.
Yeah.
And what is in their control is it has to be different the way they've played because they can't continue to give up 600 yards and 42 points or whatever it is. The new scheme is going to be new.
What I'm concerned about in the back end is that, again, I don't know that you have a lot of big-time playmakers. That's what concerns me there. I think you have a lot of choices. I think you're, as you mentioned, the key word to me, and when you're not going to be recruiting all five-star players, I think this is incredibly key. A lot of competition is imperative, especially at these positions, because they are physical positions. Our guys are going to get hurt from time to time. So it's good to have a lot of guys in the mix that can make plays for you. And the last couple of years, they've recruited a lot of guys in that back end of that defense, so they should be ready in a position to be able to compete right now. Yeah. So there's promise in that regard.
Yeah,
but I say it again, and I've said it forever. Your defense starts with your defensive line, and everything that was good about the defense when you talked about the defense last year was either one of three or four players on that defensive line or one or two linebackers. Those are the
Oliver
guys you're talking about. Yeah,
there
exactly. I mean, you had a couple guys like that. I mean, you could throw a couple more in there, but you know, it was what you don't have is you don't have guys you like coming back or love coming back. You've got a lot of young guys that need to grow a bit. I've got one or two bodies in the middle that are big guys, Nate Hoff and Ralph Green. These guys are going to have to step up and be big players and be leaders for this guy. One player is now hurt and not playing in the spring that I liked in the few minutes we saw him, and it was mostly pass defense type situations, but he was rushing from an inside position, is Robert McCray. He's out with, I think, a knee injury, I believe. Don't quote me on the injury, but he is out for the rest of the spring practice. He was a nice-looking player last year. So you got to find guys up front because that's where it all starts. You can't get shoved around up there, and you got to find a way to get a pass rush.
And they've got, the Husky position now or whatever, former Buck or whatever? Just giving the fans an idea of what they're going to see that's going to be a little bit different as well. But again, you're going to have multiple guys that are going to get multiple opportunities to make plays. And you've heard Coach Hagan talk about it over the spring as well. They have numbers, and you're not going to have to rely on a guy, hopefully three downs every other series. You've got guys in and out, shuffling in and out, harder maybe to match up with when you're not blocking the same guy every play.
And they played a lot of guys last year, so a lot of guys have gotten some experience.
And the cornerbacks that played were left out there on some islands sometimes last year. And again, Andre Brown was a true freshman, and we talked
about... They played six true freshmen in their defensive secondary at some point in time.
And at some point, that experience jars a memory in the middle of a game where you say, oh, that's right, I got juked on that last
year. Jars them out of their sleep.
But that's how you learn. Yeah. Being put in those situations. Remember, in high school, nobody threw on these guys because they're good.
Yeah.
So you get into a different end of the pool. You got to see who can swim and who can't swim. But injuries are a part of the game, especially anywhere. Name the place. Indiana's offensive line can't get hurt. They did a really good job of avoiding that last year. That was a huge part of why Jordan Howard had a great year and Devine Redding had a great year and everybody else was good. You've got a brand new quarterback battle on your hands, which is fantastic. The one thing they couldn't have, in my opinion, in this spring was, I don't even know how to pronounce the kid's name, Lago.
I don't know.
If he walked in and started taking 90% of the snaps, I'd have been nervous. Because that would have told me everybody else was behind it. Because we've seen Sudfeld just turn an ankle.
Yeah, exactly.
Xander Diem, I couldn't think of his name.
Yeah.
He's banged up. He went and got fixed so he wasn't in the spring practice. That's going to help. That's going to add some depth. He's seen Big Ten rushes.
Yeah.
He's seen Ohio State. Mm-hmm. He's played at Penn State. Exactly right.
He can't throw against it, but he knows it.
And again, the development of that, if guys are struggling to keep up with him, you get a little nervy because quarterbacks take hits. Quarterbacks take a little bit of a pounding. As good as Indiana's offensive line was, there were times you held your breath with Sudfeld going, where are you going?
Even then.
Throw the ball, get away.
He took a few hits. Offensive line played great last year, you're right. I mean, the offense itself is going to go with the quarterback. It's going to go with the running back. The running back is an open position, but as good as the offensive line was, and they do have several guys coming back, including Dan Feeney in the middle, which, you know, I love the fact that you got a big road grader in the middle of that thing.
A leader.
Exactly right. You look for the offensive line to be good again, but you're exactly right. Somebody at quarterback is going to have to stand up because that's the person pulling all the triggers. And this team, you know, they don't ask him to make the changes. They ask him to communicate the changes, but he's got to be in charge. He's got to be involved. He's got to be efficient with everything, and he's got to be able to make all the throws.
And Danny Cameron saw some game action in Penn State. It wasn't much.
No, he
threw 20 passes or so, and that was a tough day at the office there just because he hadn't been in that situation. But it kind of reminds me to a degree that not maybe as highly touted perhaps the Cam Kaufman, Trey Roberson, Nate Sudfeld. You've got kind of different options of different styles you can run back there.
Yeah.
The big question is going to be, do they have enough playmakers surrounding the quarterbacks where they can open up the book, or do they have to keep it narrow just to survive in advance?
Well, we've got a lot of options, I think, is the comparison there, because those are three quarterbacks that all started at Division I level and were productive, extremely productive. And let's not forget, you know, Roberson went on to Illinois State and led them to the playoffs a couple different times. So there's a ways to go for them to get to that level, but you're right. You got a lot of choices right now, whether, you know, that works out. I think everybody wants to see Richard Lego end up being the guy. That's why you bring him in. He's only here for 2 years. But at the very least, you need options. These guys get hurt. We got to take another quick break. 333-2665 is our phone. And we're back in just a couple minutes. Dave and Glass with you in the Zone. All right, you're back in the Zone with Dave and Glass on Newstalk 96.1 and AM 1370 WGCL. Just like that, we crown a national champion, the Villanova Wildcats. We put the green jacket on a new Masters winner, Danny Willett. You turn around and all of a sudden the playoffs in the NBA hit. Where'd that come from?
Yeah, right next to spring football and a little 500, you know it's going to get warmer.
And the Pacers have clinched the seventh spot in the playoffs. They will face the Toronto Raptors, who surprisingly only a couple games behind the Cleveland Cavaliers, but have been putting together a very nice season. And
yeah, this is the third one in a row for them over 50. So yeah. This is a crew that's been together and they're getting it figured out.
Let's talk Pacers first, because it's been an up-and-down year for the Pacers. They went with this new style. They drafted Miles Turner. He took a little while to contribute because he was banged up, and he's certainly very young. But it's been, I won't say dicey, but it's been all over the map for the Pacers. You know, some nights it works great. Some nights they're getting blown out by 30.
And some nights they abandoned that system. Right after Christmas, they went back to being big again and then went back to being small, had some injury problems. They were tied for the third seed. What? Middle of February, then all of a sudden the wheels fell off and they limped to the finish line and barely got into the playoffs. But once you're there, what's the old cliche? Of course, everybody starts 0-0 and you've got a chance to make some noise. It's a real simple equation if you're the Pacers. Somebody has to help Paul George. It's somebody plus 1.5 has to help Paul George. It doesn't have to be the same guy every night. It can be Turner. You've seen some nights where he threw up 28-6 the other night, had a great night. He's had some big rookie games. He's had some quiet rookie games. Monte Ellis, George Hill, these are guys that have to show up nightly, especially in games against better teams. Mm-hmm. You can't go into a 7-game series and get beaten 5 and have 3 games where you say, well, geez, if George Hill would have had more than 6 points and if Ellis wouldn't have gone 3-for-17, maybe the Pacers would have had a chance. Well, it's not real hard to figure out how the Pacers beat you. The Pacers like to get up and down the court. It's obvious. They have to shoot the basketball well. They have to get Paul George going, and they have to have help with it. You can't – Jan Mihimini's had some – he's had a 3-week period where he's played great, mm-hmm. and the Pacers' record's terrible. So it's not hard to figure out what makes him run. No, and the good news is he's getting confidence. The good news is he's playing better, and that's fine. You need that. You need 10 guys. You need 9 guys in the playoffs to defend. You need guys to shoot. And what the Pacers seem to get in trouble with is they can get ice cold. And if George isn't bailing them out, and there were too many games I quit counting about the middle of March where it was George's 5-for-21 and Ellis's 3-for-16.
Yeah.
You don't even have to tell me the final score. You just tell me those two guys did that, and then you've got to have a huge night from Hill, and you've got to have a huge night from somewhere else. Mm-hmm. The Pacers, when they're balanced, just like most good teams are, Dave, they can cause teams problems, because in the last couple minutes of the game, they have a guy in George who can get his own shot. He's one of the premier. He's one of the best 15 players in the NBA. I don't think anybody would argue with that much. He's come back fine from this leg injury. Everything is great.
Yep.
That's all water under the bridge.
Well, and let's remember how big of a question mark that was in the offseason, was just how he was going to come back. He's averaging 23 points a game, 7 rebounds, yeah. 4 assists a game, 2 steals.
Gold
yeah,
mine.
I mean, he's obviously still the main man here in Indiana.
He is, and how he goes usually is how the Pacers go. So, again, team's got to shoot it pretty well. The team's got to get they got to defend well. And they win more games 86-80 than they're going to win 115-108, 109, because I don't think they have that that extra layer of deep scoring that's going to help him out. Stuckey's been a nice addition off the bench. Terry, our good friend Terry Stoltz, who follows the Pacers closer than any of us, will tell you they've had about 15 to 18 games this year where they've led in the last 4 minutes and have lost. Mm-hmm. You can't do that to be an elite team. And it keeps coming back, and it keeps coming back, and it keeps haunting you. You got to knock guys out. And Toronto, the Pacers' record against Toronto isn't very good, and that's what makes you itch a little bit. I don't think you'd ever want to sit back and say, let's get LeBron and LeBron. Yeah, exactly. Come on,
let's have number one instead.
But you're not supposed to beat a number one seed. Maybe you play a little bit looser. Toronto, again, not a team that you look at on paper. It scares you half to death, but they continually beat you every time you play.
1-3, including just last Friday.
Well, and last Friday, Toronto bench four of their starters didn't play.
Yeah.
Indiana couldn't beat in a game the Pacers had to win.
Yeah.
They couldn't beat the backups for Toronto. So it's maybe not the greatest matchup, but it's better than – here's what the Pacers can't do. The Pacers can't sell to their fans that we got ninth and it was okay. Not when you were tied for third at one point.
No, exactly.
After Christmas, you can't do that.
Wholesale changes.
And you try to change everything. Did it work? Did it not work? Have the guys tuned out Vogel? Have they not turned out Vogel? I don't know. That's one of the things you'll hear. Larry Bird has told you time and time again, after X amount of years, it's usually 5 or 6, he believes the head coach is done. He doesn't care if they've won 5 championships in a row. And it doesn't care if you're 0-whatever that many times. He says that at some point, guys start to tune some things out. So what do the Pacers have in front of them? Well, they've got a mountain to climb, and they've got to beat a team that, again, I'm trying to find this tweet that does. You don't want to hear these stats. part of me is happy I can't find it because Paul George against Toronto, it's his worst points per game. It's his worst field goals per game.
Awesome.
Yeah, well, yeah, and that's the matchup that you say, well, geez, if we could have anything else but that, maybe you'd want Cleveland. Maybe you get up for the LeBron, Kyrie Irving, Kevin Love challenge because, hey, we're not going to beat them anyhow. It's a world against us, whatever you want to call it. But the Pacers in Milwaukee tonight to wrap it up. It's a meaningless game for them, so you just hope nothing silly happens in this one and they'll get going against the Toronto Raptors. When does that start? Saturday? Is that whenever the NBA gets going? Saturday or Sunday. So
yeah, on the weekend.
We'll take a look at that. Pacers winning 102-90 last night. That was the clincher. You want to know who had the most points? It's not too hard to figure out.
Monte Ellis was the big pickup in the offseason, averaging 14 points, 3 rebounds, almost 5 assists.
Steady. Solid.
Steady. You know, Monte Ellis is a guy that's 18, 20 points a game in his career. So the question is, you know, why do we not see
him? Tell me what his field goal percentage is. It's going to help you out.
43%.
That's good.
Yeah.
Not great. What's he shooting from three?
31%.
Terrible. Not for a guy that makes $12 million.
Yeah, I mean like better than that.
He's a proven scorer. You brought him in.
George is at 37. George Hill is at 41. Miles is 37.
There you go.
Yeah.
And I'm gonna tell you who shot the second most after George. I would guess it would be Monte Ellis.
Might be the most. Well, no, actually, it was C.J. Miles. George had averaged 7 3.
Miles has
been
Miles averages very, 6. Very solid player.
Yeah, and he was here the year before.
Very,
also. Yeah.
Very solid.
He's not making $12 million, like you said.
No, he's not. He's making what, 6 or 7, which is fantastic. You've had nice contributions. It just seems like the Pacers they had a chance to, again, in the middle of March, they were bumping up in the 3 and 4 areas. And then they lost, 16 to 20 at one point before the last 2 weeks of the season. It was an awful stretch. Mm. So they could have been clinched in the playoffs, not having to worry about it. But it took till what? Last night, game 81, to figure out what seed they were going to be, whether it was going to be 7 or 8. So there's obviously some issues going on with all of this. But you have to take it. If you're the Pacers, you have to wipe it clean and start over. There's no other way to do it. You've got to figure out now how you beat Toronto. Nothing else matters. You got to beat them. Well, there's no point in looking down the road, is there? There can't be. Yeah. But the Pacer team that's been put together, this is 21 playoff berths since 1990. That's the most of any Eastern Conference team. That's impressive. And the Pacers team here the last couple of years, obviously the pain that George went through, what are you going to do about that? He struggled to get back late in the season last year. They've been through this. They've been through some grit. They've been through some tough times. And this is a team that, when they play well, Dave, can give anybody some problems because they've got enough guys that can on a night, when they're balanced, can give you some problems offensively.
They did not make the post.
It was a year before last year.
Yeah.
So, no George last year. He came back late, tried to try it.
Yeah, they had a nice season with George before he got hurt in the offseason.
There you go.
Before that.
So the Pacers, again, trying to pick up the pieces. Rodney Stuckey's been in and out of the lineup. It seems like every time he gets going, he hurts his foot again or something gets wrong with him. Again, you got to find guys that can step up and play.
The draft pick was Miles Turner. You know, no question that Miles Turner was a talented prospect. But Miles Turner came in, I believe, at 19 years old. So that was
barely
always going to be a question mark. He just turned 20 at the end of March. And it took him a while to get going. But he's been much better.
Well, remember, he had a broken thumb.
Well, yeah,
he was injured. That was a 6 to 7 week process.
First of all, you're 19. Then you're injured.
Right.
You know, early expectations had to be tempered way back anyway. So it's not a surprise. It's not a criticism of Miles Turner. But, again, you had a first-round draft pick.
And where you picked him as well. Again, the expectations go up the ladder a little bit because the Pacers picked up in the draft. And, again, those are guys that you think need to participate and contribute. Mm-hmm. And once he got healthy, he did. So I don't think you can knock him from everything I've read about this kid. Not knock him.
10.5 points, 5.5 rebounds.
He had 31 against Golden State. He had 28 the other night against Brooklyn. Yeah. He has shown the flashes. He has no conscience, which will be great in the NBA. So I'm catch and shoot. He's got a great touch on his shot. He's long. He gets after it. And, again, when?
28 and 10 against Brooklyn.
There you go. In a rout. So it's always good when the Pacers turn up the juice and knock them out. But, again, the Pacers have had these games where it was time to get over the hump. It was time to fire. Everybody's there. Everybody's mostly healthy.
No points in 5 minutes against Cleveland not that long ago. So, I mean, it's up and down. He's a rookie.
Yeah, but, again, the bad news in those games is when you don't get anything, you don't get anything. That's the problem.
You don't
because
get the experience
where
either.
Else are you going to go?
Yeah.
There's no other 6'11 guys there. They're going to come out and do what Turner can do. So you have to live with a little bit of the growing pains. You love to see this Pacer team make a move at the deadline. You think they don't do it again. So they didn't want to shake things up. I don't know. They went out. Who did they go out and get? They went out and got Ty Lawson. He's played, 10 minutes?
Yeah, not much.
He has an injury problem.
He's averaging 17 a game, but it's only 12 games.
17 minutes a game. Yeah. And again, what has that done? Has it put you over the hump? Did it give you the shot in the arm you needed? They kind of took a shot on a guy that had some problems.
It helps with the Rodney Stuckey situation a little bit. But
it does. But again, the Pacers have to have their best players playing the best. They don't have the depth. They don't have the bankroll to spend where they can load up a roster.
Yeah.
They don't have a roster where guys say, oh, no, I'll take $2 million to go play there because they got a chance at winning.
Well, you talk about moves. The one weird move was bringing in Chase Budinger and then getting rid of him right before the trade deadline, too.
I don't know if it's a chemistry issue.
Well, it's one of those things
with
Larry, though. He's done this a few different times over the last few years where he brings in a guy, and it's not necessarily a huge fanfare guy. But you hear about him a little bit, and then all of a sudden you're getting rid of him in the middle of the season or the end of the next season. I don't know. It's just
here's the problem with the Pacers, and again, this is from the Toronto game last Friday, and these are Vogel's thoughts. I don't think we respected the guys who were out there talking about the team, of the starters that didn't play for Toronto. But in game 79 or game 78.
Why does it matter who's out there?
You're fighting for your life.
Yeah,
it can't be about them. It's got to be about these guys. And, Frank, I don't mean to pick on you here, but if you're not – how do they not respect him? I mean, maybe the pro game is different where you don't talk about that stuff. You just talk about we're going to run these ISOs and this is what we're going to do here. How do you let that seep into your team? That sounds like a starts at the top, trickles down to the bottom, or make sure guys are tuned in and ready to go. But again, another quote, they're not as big as names as the guys who played regularly, but they got good players. Still no excuse for how we played. And then he went on to say we wouldn't have beaten anybody tonight. That's the Pacers in game 78.
Too bad they had a game.
That's game 78.
Yeah.
And again, this team was tied for third at one point. So you hope they figure it out, and we're going to watch because we're Pacer fans, and that's the point. But tough to flip that switch, Dave. Did Iowa flip the switch in that NCAA tournament?
Nope.
No, they didn't.
Nope.
They didn't. Once it goes south, sometimes it goes south.
And
the guys got one eye on their vacation book and one guy in the playoffs.
Pacers
are
in the playoffs as the 7th seed, face the Toronto Raptors starting this weekend. We will see what happens. You got to take another quick break. 333-2665 is the phone number. Dave and Glass with you in the zone. All right, you're back in the zone with Dave and Glass on News Talk 96.1 and AM 1370 WGCL. Programming notes for you. We've got Reds baseball Wednesday, Thursday, Friday. Tonight, right after, a little after the show, 8 o'clock is first pitch at Wrigley Field. Same with tomorrow, Thursday night, 8 o'clock, and again on Friday, although Friday they will be in St. Louis
The Lou.
But it's a good-looking week. We are in the middle of Little 5 week. We're just ramping up to it, I guess. That doesn't seem too crazy out around town yet, but it will soon. Before we get to the end of the show, I want to congratulate Bloomington South men's basketball player Tucker Blackwell, who made the Indiana All-Star team. And a nice tradition for years and years and years in Indiana. And so it's great for Tucker. Nice to get a local kid in on that. He played last year with the South area juniors when they had the switch back and forth to the South games and played well with them and then had a great senior season. Rumor is he's, he might be heading to Army on a scholarship, which is a fantastic opportunity. So a great off-season reward for the kid and played 4 years at South too. So
yep, and being an Indiana All-Star, great honor. And the game has lost luster, and that has nothing to do with the kids that play in it because Indiana whips Kentucky every year because Kentucky can't find, I don't know, 10 guys in Louisville area to suit up and play in that game. I guess they all go to Louisville and Kentucky, but Indiana kids beat them by 100 every single year, it seems like. And they'll have the schedule announced, the junior All-Star games. It'll be like June 5th and 7th, and then it's the 12th and 13th, I believe. One night at Bankers Life, the following night at Bellarmine College. And there's a link on our Facebook page. Go to facebook.com/WGCL Radio, the link to the story about the whole Indiana All-Star team. You can see that schedule and everything else up there. And obviously, Joe will have more on that as the weeks get closer to that game. And obviously, with sometimes quiet in the summer, but not really when you got Indiana All-Star. So great stuff there.
Absolutely. Looking back at the NBA then, too, everybody finishing
big
up
night
their
tonight.
Season.
Big night in Golden State tonight.
Very big.
The record that perhaps no one thought that would be broken, at least maybe not by the Golden State Warriors, was right. Michael Jordan, Scottie Pippen, the great Bulls team, 72-10. You only play 82 regular season games in the NBA, and that's the most ever in history. Well, Golden State has 72 going into the final game tonight. They're mm-hmm. looking to become the first team ever to have single-digit wins, and I believe it's the first team ever. It has to be. I don't think they played 62 games.
Single-digit losses?
Or single-digit losses, excuse me. Right. Tonight they host Memphis. They're 17-point favorites. Ooh. On that, and again, that's a really good basketball team that nobody gets to see because the game start just like tonight's going to start at 10:30 at night. And there's been a couple Saturday night games. I think they played, who'd they play in that one Saturday night game? Went to triple overtime or whatever it was at Cleveland? Can't remember who it was, but you're up till midnight watching right. that game because the basketball's so good. Well, that'll get you to the halftime tonight.
Yeah, 10:30.
So are you going to stay up all night and watch Golden State clinch? The good news is NBA TV will have that game for you replayed ad infinitum after it happens. And tonight, the final game of Kobe Bryant's career. 20 years in the league, wrapping it up in his prime. Well, this will be for the historians to argue with, but when he was in his prime, I would put him in any starting five anywhere at the two or the three.
Sure.
He was unguardable. He was mean. He was angry. He played defense. He did everything a superstar player should do on the basketball court. We're not talking about anything off the court. It's not tonight's not the night for that. You want to knock Kobe Bryant because you don't like what he does off the court?
That's
You don't like a lot of people then.
Right, exactly right. Or
at least
be fair about
it. A lot of sports that have a lot of problems. But we're not talking about that. We're talking about the player he was, the Shaquille O'Neal teams that he was on, some of the best, not win-wise, number-wise, but – championship rings. I lost count how many he's got. It's at least five, I think.
He's got five.
And he won one without Shaq. So if you want to knock him for, hey, if he didn't have Shaq, he didn't have this. Great teams are great teams. You think the Celtics would have been any good if Russell wasn't there?
Yeah.
They had really good players. They might have won two or three.
All right, they wouldn't have been that good.
Well, who's going to shut down Wilt Chamberlain if you got Bill Russell?
Michael Jordan left for 2 years to go play baseball. And
that didn't work out. Tony Kukoc didn't carry the day, did he?
No, Scottie Pippen's a great
didn't
player,
carry the day. But
he wasn't winning the championship.
The team dynamic is still a wonderful thing about sports, but so is the individual greatness, and I think that's what you talk about when Bryant comes in. No one could stop him. You could slow him down. He had 81 in the game. I know it was ridiculous. But the point is he could always get a shot. Why are guys like that always the best guys? Because they can always get their shot.
Mm-hmm.
Jordan 6'6", Bryant 6'7", LeBron 6'8", Bird 6'8", Magic is 6'9". Isaiah was probably the best small guy to get his own shot.
Mm-hmm.
But when you talk about all these other guys, they're all
big
wing
size,
players,
absolutely.
And they're all twos, and they're all thick guys that are strong and are mean and can play and are competitors.
And you develop that fadeaway at that size, too.
It's unguardable. It's just like Tiger Woods' two-iron stinger when things were going bad. When you needed to get a bucket,
get
you get in the paint, you go to your bread and butter move and you hit it, and you hit it more times than you don't.
And I think what Kobe Bryant needs to get the credit for, not only, you know, the things he accomplished in that regards, but he was always a guy that was working his butt off.
See how many defensive teams he's been on.
Yeah.
First team defense.
I mean,
that tells you all you need to know.
He was, you know, one of the guys that's just the epitome of working his butt off in the offseason and getting mad at other guys for not living up to his level of preparation.
And
you heard about it all the time, and that's a lot of reasons he gets some bad press is that he's on guys a lot because he expects guys to be a lot because he has those expectations of himself.
Get on my level, as the kids
exactly
would
right.
say. And not everybody could get on his level. There's no doubt about that. And new generation's got different ways of doing things. But he will be missed in the sense of his – again, you don't like to see great players retire, but it happens all the time. All that means is you and me are getting older.
Right.
The game's going to be fine. The game's in great hands. And the Warriors are a perfect example. They got a 6'3" guy who weighs 160 pounds is destroying the league.
They can't miss.
Speaking about getting your own shot.
Yeah.
There's the exception to every rule.
Yeah, talk about Monte Ellis' three-point shooting. This guy's shooting unbelievable numbers. But
Steph Curry's got more three-pointers than most teams and most people because he's on he to a different degree, is unguardable.
Kobe's career comes to an end tonight. They play
both
Utah.
Those games are on. 10 o'clock for that game and 10:30
for the Jets. Utah has a chance, if they win, has a chance of getting the 8th seed in the West. So it's a game that means something to Utah, certainly.
Fighting Gordon Haywards.
And you know when Kobe Bryant laces him up, it means something to him. Again, I think that's what you got to take.
No
is, every game, every play meant something to him, and the intensity was pretty much all
30
there.
Shots tonight, over or under?
For Kobe?
Yeah.
I hope he goes for 45. Come on. Just
shots?
One
a minute.
Shots, yeah.
48.
80 points.
Why not? Light it up, Kobe.
Who's going to stop him?
Well,
who's going to stop him from shooting?
No
coach isn't going to tell him not to shoot. Players aren't going to tell him not to shoot.
10 p.m. for Kobe, 10:30 for the Warriors. So you've got a basketball bonanza tonight. And turn on the Reds on the radio. Listen to Cubbies while that's going on.
There you go. Remember, Reds tonight, Thursday and Friday, all 8 o'clock. And we'll have it for you here. And we will be back Monday. So tune in then, folks. You've been in the zone.